pay for that person to show you how to do it. Partner with people that know what they're doing. Don't try to figure it all out on your own, because it's a lot less expensive and a lot less painful to learn from others' mistakes than necessarily to learn from yours.
Hey everyone, Jake and Gino here with some exciting news.
The Wheelbarrow Profits podcast is changing to the Jake and Gino Show.
You will still be able to find new episodes every Thursday on YouTube or your favorite podcast streaming service.
It's the same great show with the same great content.
And the same great hosts. You're not going to want to miss an episode.
So be sure to catch us on the next episode of the Jake and Gino Show.
Hello, everybody. This is Jake Stenzio, host of the Jake and Gino podcast, with my co-host, the multifamily mentor, the coach, chef, father, six, best-selling author, the G-Daddy. Gino Barbo. Gino, how's it going?
Mr. Stenziano, I'm doing good, bro. How you doing?
Always making it happen, big man. Today's guest is a veteran real estate entrepreneur with ownership stake in over $35 million of multifamily investments. He's the founder of FlipNerd.com and a sought-after advisor for real estate investors in the U.S. So without further ado, Mike Hambray, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Glad to be here.
You got an array. You got a smorgasbord of stuff going out there with the Flip Nerd and the multifamily stuff. Tell us about the early days and getting started in real estate, and then the evolution and how it progressed.
Yeah. I started off as a single family guy, but if I kind of go back before that, I started real estate investing in 2008, which again was single family. But what kind of got me started at that point for my wife and I, we were in our early 30s, not to date ourselves here. But, we had pretty good jobs in corporate America. We actually met in grad school.
So, what were you doing?
I was primarily a finance or a strategy guy for large retailers. So, and I'll tell you a little bit about. So basically, I started off as a finance guy, and so did my wife. We didn't know each other, but she was an investment banker on Wall Street. I worked for a large bank in Chicago. And eventually we made our way to grad school at UT in Austin and got our MBAs there. And so, you know, part of that process is just being unhappy with the jobs that I had. I thought I needed more formal education, right? Mm-hmm. Which it's kind of funny in hindsight. We were very big on education and I still am, but I realized that, the whole thing is you're basically on a production line to try to improve yourself to get somebody else to be willing to hire you, right? So, now I'm unemployable at this point, but at the time though, that was really the goal.
A lot of truth to that, right?
Yeah. At the time that was the goal. How do I make myself prettier so somebody will want me? Right. And so went back to grad school because I thought I needed more formal education, got out of grad school and got really an amazing job. And it was amazing. So I worked directly for the CEO of a $5 billion company. And, you know, if I kind of fast forward a little bit, 3 years later, flying high, my boss got fired, and it was just a kind of a political smear. It was just a nasty situation, but I was his
beginning
guy.
Of wokeness. So. Was that it?
What's that?
Was that the beginning of wokeness?
No, this was pre-wokeness. This was pre-wokeness.
Okay.
But, the truth is I was kind of tied to him and I was his guy. So politically I had to go too, you know, and, then I went to another company that was flying high. It was more of a startup, but flying high. And did really well there for 18 months. And then they filed for bankruptcy. And it was just this like wake up call for
weird.
Me.
Yeah.
Big turn. Hey, I've always been a hard worker, right? So I worked really hard for somebody else and it seemed like the end, there was no end in sight. And then I hit a wall and it was like, okay, how many times am I going to do that before I learn that this isn't the right thing to do? So that's when we moved into single family. So we kind of, you know, long story short, we were moved across the country. My son was just born like 2 months before this company filed for bankruptcy and I left there. And my wife had left her job and, you know, was well compensated as a consultant too. So for us, it was just this huge pivot of, you know, everybody thought we were crazy. Like, why are you not going to get a regular job? What about insurance? Like all those things that, the W-2 worker worries about. And so we just kind of felt it was something in our heart to jump into real estate investing. So 2008, we really jumped in with both feet. We really had kind of been backed in a corner at that point. So we were off to the races pretty fast. In our first calendar year, we flipped about 65 houses in the Dallas market and kind of stayed at that rate, 60, 70 houses a year for several years before things kind of got more complicated with adding on coaching and a rental portfolio and all sorts of other stuff. But those were kind of the early days.
Mike, maybe you can answer this question for me. My son is going to sophomore year of college. He's buying textbooks now. $250 for an accounting textbook, $20 passive income. That's $20 for this book. Why $250 for a textbook? That's all I want to know. His books are going to be like $1,000 For what? I don't understand the racket.
He's trying to get those letters after his name so he can be like Mike.
He'll be able to sell. He'll be able to sell them back for like $80 afterwards, though. So,
but come on, now that is the biggest racket going. And I'm not saying college isn't the right thing. It's the right thing for a lot of people if they don't have to put on debt, if they don't have to get 150 or 200 grand in debt, if they're going for a major that you need it, whether it's engineering, whether it's being a doctor. But if you're going for communications or you're going for a major that you don't need it, just think twice before you do it.
Because Toastmasters.
$250 for a textbook. I'm like, dude. And you know, I obviously I wanted to get it because he wants to get his accounting and finance. He's going to come work for the company. So he needs to know what statement of cash flows are. I get the whole thing, but come on, people. It's about time we start revolting with this whole college nonsense and making it a mandate that everyone needs to go to school when we don't have enough plumbers. We don't have enough electricians. We don't have enough other people in the single family space. Mike, my question to you though is when you decided to do that, you're W-2, you're in the rat race, you're at the corporate mindset. How did it feel to all of a sudden put the entrepreneurial hat on and for the first time? What did that feel like?
It was tough for a while. I mean, I say this, we had the interest in doing it. We just didn't really know, like, you know, when you work for a big company, you have resources, like you have, so if I manage a team, I would go to HR and they would help me find people. Right. Mm-hmm. And now all of a sudden I'm, you know, CEO and chief bottle washer and everything else. So it was just a big change to go from, I have a very specific niche role because I'm a cog in a much larger machine to like the whole, I'm responsible for the whole machine. Right. And so it took a little while to just figure out that we, you know, everything that has to get done by us. And eventually we added a team and, you know, all that stuff, but it was a little bit of a wake up call for sure. But I'll tell you, on the same hand, it felt liberating to know that if I fail now, it's because I did something wrong, not because somebody else made a decision that I shouldn't be there.
That's a pro right there. Give me a couple of other pros of it and maybe a couple of cons too. Because everyone thinks it's like, oh, I'm working for myself. I don't have a boss. I've got a boss. It's Jake and the Jake and Gino team. Those are my bosses. That's the way you have to look at it. You got to be held accountable by somebody. So you're not in the wind by yourself. You have your family. That's your boss. You have investors. Those are your bosses, contractors. So don't think you're out there by yourself being an entrepreneur and you're not beholden to anybody.
Right. Right. Yeah. I think, you know, one of the other big pluses is that it's really not, although I thought I was highly compensated at the time, it's really not that hard to offset that income when you're an entrepreneur, especially in the real estate space, right? There's a lot of ways to make money that, you know, well, without giving anything away here specifically. I mean, it used to take me way longer to make the amount of money that I make. In fact, I never made money like this before, right? So, but even when we first started, like, you know, we could flip a handful of houses and I made what I made in a salary in a year before. And so it was a lot of work to do that, no doubt. But, and I think ultimately, you know, there's a lot of people that talk about the freedoms in this business, like freedom of time, let's say. And so we really focus a lot on travel and there's a lot of things that we love to do, but it's real easy for folks to see that, the allure of that, but never actually get it because, you know, if you kind of follow like the cash flow quadrant, Robert Kiyosaki's cash flow quadrant, at the end of the day, a lot of people get stuck in that self-employed box and they really still have a job. It's just different than it was before. So that's probably one of the bigger cons, I'd say.
Tell me how that first deal looked to you. I mean, what was that first deal? Do you remember that first deal?
I do remember our first deal. So it took us 4 months and we got an office. We actually had an admin. So we had a lot, we kind of knew enough to know that we needed to scale up quickly and act like a real business. And those are some of the benefits of leaving corporate America is we had enough sense to know that we needed to build a team, we needed to have processes and systems in place. And
you probably got a lot of good trainings though as well. I worked for a large pharma company and there was a lot of actual good hands-on training that I was able to learn. And also I remember thinking back, like early on the culture was good but then it turned and the culture was bad. So you actually got exposure to a lot of interesting hands-on experiences. I'm sure you maybe touch on that a little bit in your corporate career as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll let me come back to that. I'll talk about the first deals. It took us 4 months, and then we ended up getting two deals on the same day. So, like our first deal was really two deals at once, and one of them we wholesaled, one of them we rehabbed, and have a lot of lessons. But you're right; you never forget those first couple deals. Mm-hmm. But yeah, when we left, you know, I've told this story before about leaving corporate America. One of the benefits of being in a big community like that is if you're social, there's always a happy hour. It's always somebody's birthday. Somebody's always got good news to share. And then we went to, for my wife and I, we went to this essentially a little hole in the wall in a strip center in a not so great part of town with just like my wife and I and an admin. Right. And so like, it just gets, and I'm a social creature, you know, so it just got kind of lonely. And then a lot of my friends from, you know, past, like we, over time, we just don't have as much in common. We have all of our past, which we remember. In fact, tonight I'm meeting with a couple of good old friends tonight, but we'll talk a lot about the past, right? Instead of the future, because what I do is very different than what they do because they're W-2 type workers. But ultimately that's what propelled me into coaching and the mastermind and all other sorts of other things, because I just kind of got lonely. And so it just helped me to kind of share what I know with other people and get around a lot of other people. And so now that's the crux of everything I do, is kind of collaboration and teaming up with people and working with other people.
Mike, when I left the restaurant to go into real estate full-time with Jake and do Jake and Gino, I was hanging out at the library. I was such a loser for like 3 years. I was doing deals in the library, talking about $6 million deals with next to a homeless guy. I remember it's like this guy, and I'm looking at Jake, we got it. And I'm thinking to myself, I can't believe I'm here at the library by myself at 3 o'clock and they're going to kick me out because it closes. It was just,
I used to go there to do expense reports, Gino, that same library when I was at Mayapack. It's so funny. I'm surprised with it.
Mayapack, Shrub Oak, yeah. Yorktown. I hit every library possible.
Well, Mike sounds like he was like Better Call Saul. I don't know if you guys know that show, but he sounds like the strip mall, like, you know, tucked away in the corner there. It sounds like it was a little lonely. So
it was because you know, at the time, and I would say, you know, when I first started, I think I was worried, you know, we were at a point where we were, we had to make this work. Right. And so we just kind of put our head down and just worked hard. And I think at the beginning, you know, one of the things that I took away from corporate America, and maybe it was some of the jobs that I had, is it was very much a dog eat dog world. Like there wasn't, one of the great things about multifamily is it's very clear that you can benefit from teaming up with people and working together. But in the single family space and coming out of corporate America, at that time, I very much had a different mindset where I thought, if I share what I know with somebody, like somebody's going to take something from me. I've got some secret sauce and I don't want to tell anyone, which is total bullshit now. But at the time, that's just really how I felt for a little while until I, you know, started to open up a little bit more.
Mike, my dad's name is Vito, passed away 15 years ago. Old timers don't want to share the secret sauces. He never told me his secret recipe to his cheesecake. He took it to the, he would put something extra in there. Would let me see it. Every time he made it, it tastes a little different than mine. Never told me exactly what he put in that damn cheesecake. And it's like, you know, there's no secret sauce. It's really open source nowadays. And you mentioned the mastermind. The mastermind, we're having a mastermind right now. To me, this is what I think. I've been doing a mastermind for the last 6 years with Jake on the Jake and Gino channel. Every week, we have amazing guests on. Can you touch on to you what a mastermind is and how it really brought you to that next level?
Yeah. So, you know, I was in a couple masterminds before I created my own. And, you know, there was always something missing from the ones that I was at. And for me, a big part of it was just a culture of really, you know, there's a lot of chest thumping in this industry and where people just brag on stuff. Right. And so we're like, hey, at the end of the day, I mean, I knew people specifically that would get up and give a presentation on how awesome things were, but I knew that their life was falling apart at home, or they had other things going on, but they just never felt open to share that. And so when I started my mastermind, that was the intent, was like, let's be open about what's going on here. Like we don't have to wear a suit and tie to a mastermind. We wear t-shirts and flip-flops. Like, let's just be ourselves and be how we would be anywhere else. And so that's really part of the culture that we've created, is a way for people to get together, share what's working, share what's not working. Everything is based on giving. And so it's pretty common for us to see people, you know, 4 or 5x their business within a year because they just are open and sharing exactly what's working now, talking to each other 365 days a year, even outside of our quarterly events. And so just a community of kind of giving and sharing of the best of their knowledge, because they know the more they share, the more they're going to get back in return. They're going to find somebody that was a little closed off, but feel like they got so much that they have this responsibility to give back. And so it's just a way for people to get together and, you know, hold each other accountable to a new level, to take themselves to another level, and to kind of share what's working now, because, you know, they've obviously said two heads are better than one, you know, in my group, 100+ heads are way better than one. Right. Mm-hmm.
So what made you start Flip Nerd and the podcast?
Yeah. So Flip Nerd is coming on 8 years old now. So we've got about 1500 podcasts that I've done. And I think it was back to that stage of like, at that point I'd been investing for probably about 5 years, had done some coaching, mostly newbies. and started to make some friends, like other influencers or other coaches or other people that were a high caliber. So when I started off in coaching, I was the pinnacle of the people that I was hanging out with. Like, even though I loved giving, I didn't get a lot in return that would kind of push me to the next level. So, you know, I tried to always give, but I wasn't around peers, let's say. And so the podcast for me was a way to really start to meet other people mm-hmm. that were more of my peers, more people that would push me to another level and that I could learn from. And so that's really how the podcast started. And then ultimately, after several hundred shows and meeting just a ton of amazing people, you know, I started to think like, how can I get around this caliber of person more? And it's like, it was kind of obvious for me that I created a mastermind. So, and I, in fact, you know, the very first people that were in my mastermind were people that I'd met on my podcast, quite frankly.
That's awesome. So what brought you over to the dark side of multifamily?
You know, it's one of those things that I'd always been interested in. And, you know, my story was probably similar to a lot of others, as they started with little greenhouses and moved up to bigger red ones. Right. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that necessarily has to happen that way. But for me, it was, you know, for me, real estate was a way, what I really wanted was mailbox money, right? Which mm-hmm. is what everybody wants. I wanted to have rentals and just get mailbox money. Well, of course, they're nowhere near as passive as what anybody says, especially on the single family side. But we do have a single family portfolio, and it's helped us generate a lot of wealth because appreciation's been mm-hmm. crazy the last, you know, 10 years. But for me, wholesaling and fix and flipping houses was a way to accumulate more rental properties. But I had to fix and flip and I had to wholesale because I needed to feed the monster. I had to pay yes. for advertising. I had overhead. So I needed that active income to invest for longer term. And then as my businesses grew, as we started to have a lot more cash flow with our rental properties, as I started, you know, coaching and the mastermind and other businesses that I have that were creating more kind of today money, I didn't need to wholesale and rehab as much to invest in long-term stuff. And so just kind of was evolutionary that I can move up to multifamily where the deals are way bigger and we can move the needle a lot faster. And so for me, it was just a way to kind of, you know, to use a cheesy cliche, build my legacy faster, build that passive income faster, build my net worth faster.
What would you have done differently? Would you, if you know what you do now, would you have gotten into multifamily a lot sooner? Would you have started at multifamily?
You know, that's always an interesting question because I think it's hard to say that I would have done anything differently mm-hmm. because right or wrong, whatever I did got me here, yes. right? Like I couldn't, I needed those lessons to get me where I am today. But, you know, I think I probably would have sold a multifamily earlier. Mm-hmm. And the truth is, you know, I told you guys, I invest a lot with Corey Peterson, a GP on several of his deals. Now I knew enough because I've coached and mentored so many people that I needed to find somebody that could show me how to climb that learning curve faster. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I think for those that are out there that are trying to learn, take a lesson from this, it's like, you know, pay for that person to show you how to do it. Partner with people that know what they're doing. Don't try to figure it all out on your own because it's a lot less expensive and a lot less painful to learn from others' mistakes than necessarily to learn from yours, right? Mm-hmm. We don't all have to climb that same learning curve.
You said your lessons that you learned, so it was worth, you know, the trials and tribulations. What were one or two that really stick out that helped propel your career?
You know, I think probably one of the bigger ones is along the lines of what I've said here. When I first started off, I was a little more guarded, didn't really want to share a lot of knowledge, was never really wanted to per se partner with people. People would bring me deals and I would do them. I would buy them, you know, they would assign deals to me or whatever. But I would say the last 5 years or so, the last, you know, kind of 4 or 5 years, there's almost nothing that I don't do that's not some sort of collaboration with somebody else, whether it's mm-hmm. partners on a deal, whether it's partners in a business. And I was apprehensive to that for a long time. But the truth is from my perspective, you get to a certain point to where partnering with somebody adds a whole new level of accountability to me. Once you've kind of achieved, at least for me, financial freedom, where I don't need to work as hard as I do anymore, the one way to get myself to work harder is to have accountability to somebody else, because I can let myself down all day long, but I'll never let my friends down. I'll never let my partners down. And so mm-hmm. That'd probably be one of the bigger lessons, is being willing to partner earlier on and maybe take a smaller piece of the pie, but be able to do more deals and, quite frankly, just have more fun.
Mike, if I am a single family investor right now or a wholesaler and I'm thinking about getting into multifamily, I've got that limiting belief of where do I find deals? Where do I find the money? Which is two of the stupidest questions, because you don't even know what a deal looks like and you don't even know right. anything about syndication. you did the right thing. You had the mindset of it's going to be long-term. I'm getting this active income over here. This is transactions, pay the bills. Equity right here makes you rich. You're doing the right thing. What else should an investor who wants to take that leap over to, like I say, the dark side of multifamily? Because everyone thinks it's, ooh, pie in the sky kind of stuff.
I think you're joining the bright side of the force here, my friend.
I do too, but I, you know, we've got a single family guy who started. I don't want to call it the bright side, but what should I be focusing on? I'm in single family. I'm wholesaling. I'm doing $1 million a year in business. I've got the overhead. I'm stretched. You know, I want to get some of that quote unquote passive income, or I want to start building rental portfolio. What do I need to do? What are the next steps that I need to do to get into multifamily?
I think there's one of the things that I struggled with early on is I wanted to kind of back to single family where I did everything. I wanted to control everything. And then I just came to the realization that's just not going to happen in multifamily. Like, it's okay to, you know, when I first started off, I was more of just a passive investor, more of an LP, putting in my money. The returns were nowhere near what I knew I could probably do on the single family side, but it was a way for me to get in, get exposed to the process, get exposed to deals, and kind of learn from there. And then my role has just kind of evolved over time. So I'd say consider, if you're looking at the returns, like, or some way to get it, maybe it's your return on your time, or it's return on the deals. Effort. Like, yeah, just consider that part of the education process to get you in that space. And back on the single family side, I've had people before that I'm talking to, like, what are your goals? What do you want to accomplish here? And, you know, I would find out that they make $80,000 a year, and they're like, well, I want to make $500,000 in my first year, and I'm not happy unless I do that. And it's like, well, your first goal should just be offsetting your income, right? And I think sometimes when people want to move up to multifamily, they think the same thing. Like, I want to strike it rich on my first deal. And it's like, look, even if you play a small role, the education you're going to get from that is huge. So don't be afraid to play small for a little while. That's just part of the education process.
Mm-hmm. Here's the thing where, yeah, I just want to comment. You're like, well, people think they're going to get a single family house and they're going to cash flow $300 a month on that house. And they look at an apartment and they say it might be 150, say. And they're like, well, the returns are not as good. And it's something you have to put into perspective when it comes down to economies of scale. Yeah. Because it's going to be a lot easier to buy 100 unit multifamily than it is to acquire 100 homes and then to staff those homes and to make sure you're getting the proper service in those homes. So it's the scalability factor that I think so many people just struggle with early on, because they're like, I can make this in a house. Why would I do anything else? And yeah, I think no you're doubt. Missing the bigger picture and the true wealth that multifamily can create versus a single family home portfolio. I think at minimum, it's just a lot easier.
I agree completely. I agree. Yeah. And we don't even manage our single family portfolio. Somebody else does, but it's still, there's
but you still got to find someone good to manage it. If you have any pride of ownership,
no doubt.
Because that's there's a lot part. Of the shitheads out there that will screw it up for you.
Yeah. So. No doubt.
Yeah. I don't even know. I got shitheads screwing it up. Where am I going next? Senziano, talk
wherever
to
you want, man, wherever you want to go. So no, it's just, I think especially, you know, I was reading, there's the most job openings right now in US history on record right now. And look, you have a resident right now in that single family home. You have 100 single family homes all over town. You can't do it all yourself. The service required to hit that is going to be much harder than 100 multifamily in one location. So you got to consider that right now.
But that's a beautiful thing about it, guys. You don't have to start with 100 unit. Mike mentioned LP. For everybody out there, LP means limited partner. It means you're passive. That is truly passive. So if you want to start out there and get experience there, put some money into some of these deals as a passive investor. But remember, learn how to underwrite the deal. Learn how to invest as if you're investing as an active investor, and then try to do it passively. This is where I want to go, Stenziano. Systems. You're talking about like growing and everything. What systems? Give us a couple ideas, a couple of tips on how you've been able to scale all of your different businesses, whether it's your single family, whether it's your multifamily, whether it's your mastermind, Flip Nerd podcast.
Yeah, we have, without looking at talking about specific kind of systems or tools that we use, because those change all the time, right? I think that's where a lot of people get hung up, is they're so hung up on what's the best CRM right now? What's the best task management tool right now? A lot of them are very similar, right? But it's just to have a systematic approach to everything. And that's how you get yourself out of the job ultimately, is create a standard operating procedure for how you do everything. So we tend to use, more CRMs than I can even name, because I've got a bunch of business. We have more tools than we probably need. But to kind of keep it simple, I would say, so we use a tool called Asana for task management, and we have standard operating procedures for everything we do. When we get a new deal, if we add a new investor, if we're flipping a new house, if we bring on a new member in my mastermind, like these are the 70 steps that we do. We send them a welcome email. We send them a welcome gift. We find out what their birthday is. What shirt size do they wear? Like pop, 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 like every single thing you can
think
of. Did
that happen year one, or was that something that evolved? So talk about
it evolved.
Talk about that, because year one we were systemless. Okay,
yeah,
same thing. We were 70 units deep, and we had zero. So
yeah, same thing. Same thing for us. Same thing for us. It was like, but when you start doing things over and over again,
fucking
and honestly,
annoying.
my wife really is the brains of our outfit for the most part. So she's very much more of an implementer, integrator type, very kind of process oriented. As a finance, we're both finance people, so we've got some of that in us, right? So but she is more so than me, and I just had to adapt over time to kind of protect my marriage, because having her do everything was not ideal. I think that was just evolution, right? We're doing something that's like, this is the fifth time we've done that, like let's build a checklist. And first it started with just, you know, totally dating myself here, but paper checklists. We would like build stuff in Excel and print them out, and we've got a clipboard, and we're like doing stuff, right? And then that evolved over time to iPads and, you know, cloud-based systems. But I think it part of it has to be evolutionary. Like I know, you know, one of the other lessons I've learned over time is not being fearful of failing, right? Failure is just a stepping stone to success. Like, so it used to be, I would got to figure it all out before I do it. And now it's like, you know, even if I think it's figured out, half of the shit's going to be wrong anyway. So let's just dive in and figure out what the process needs to be while we're doing it. Like, mm-hmm. Let's kind of build the parachute after we've jumped out of the plane, and hopefully we figure it out before we hit the ground.
It's funny because we use Asana. I call Asana Asana.
It do just we drives still me use nuts. It?
We use it sometimes. We have Trello. We have Slack. We have Active Campaign. We have Pipe Drive. We have Monday. Nothing. Blah blah.
I knew about Monday. I thought it replaced everything else.
Monday, Sunday. So basically, all you need is Google Sheets and Google Docs, and you start your systems that way, and you start documenting everything. What do you do Monday? If you have an employee, document every single thing that employee does. Do some training videos for that employee. So when that employee gets promoted, the person who takes that person over, it knows exactly what to do. It's just a step. And you know what? Yep. Systems are never
on a loom, right? Gino, you just
on a loom, like, bro. You like the loom.
The loom, the Asana, you got all of them going, right?
But I'm just, it's very overwhelming and daunting when you've never done it before. I had a restaurant for 20 years. I didn't have systems and procedures. People would walk in. People would walk in. How do you greet them? Hey, Gino's, how may I help you? Everyone greeted them differently. You pick up the phone. No one answered the phone the same exact way. No one packed the food the same exact way. No one sat. It's something very, very simple. But if you're not trained in it and you don't have that mindset, it's going to cause havoc. Because what's going to happen is it's going to be, as Mike said, the E. You are going to be the self-employed on that quadrant because you can never leave. And that's not what it's all about. And I'm not here to tell everybody that, hey, I'm making these systems because I want to be totally passive. I'm sick right now. I want to be at work. I love to work. So I'm not creating systems to remove myself. I'm creating systems so I could do much better work and stuff that I love to do. That's right. What for me with systems is all that. It's not like, okay, I'm going to retire and go to the beach. You could do that if you want, but systems is really to replace what is really lower level tasks. So you can focus on tasks that are higher generating, like creating an amazing mastermind with over 100 people. Do you think Mike could do that if he was out there every day doing the same freaking tasks over and over again? And it doesn't happen overnight. It takes years and years and years. But you know what? It starts with your quarterly priorities. So everyone, I challenge everyone listening. Q4 is coming up soon. Set a date for Q4. Get a couple systems on the docket and start building out your systems. And it'll just continue to evolve. Right, Stenzi?
Hey, let's take a quick time out here from our sponsor.
Are you looking for ways to improve your life?
Here at Jake and Gino, our mission is to empower students through financial education and the vehicle of multifamily investing.
Yes, Jake. We agree that a person with financial intelligence can change the world for the better.
We've created our proprietary three-step framework, Buy Right, Manage Right, and Finance Right, that we teach to our community. This framework, along with education, our one-on-one mentorship, on-site boot camps, and the amazing community, has propelled our students to massive success.
We've all been there. We've had so many students that have been able to shift their mindset, overcome limiting beliefs, and set a clear path to achieve their goals. Whether you're currently fixing and flipping, wholesaling, or buying single-family rentals, and you know that multifamily investing is the right vehicle for you, I encourage you to visit jakeandgino.com /apply to schedule your complimentary consultation with our team. And I want to let you know, this isn't a high pressure sales call. It's really just a discovery call to get to know each other better and see if we're a good fit for working together. And if for any reason we're not a good fit, our team has tons of resources we will share with you to help you along your journey.
If you're ready to stop spinning your wheels, go to jakeandgino.com/apply and schedule your call now. We're back. We might sponsor Monday if they give us a rip because we are using them. You know, we got to be true to our core values. All right. So did you do any systems training or anything like that early on? Because we've done them all. I think we've touched on, you know, two or three of them, you know, quite a bit on the show. Did you guys go through anything within your business?
You know, about 4 years ago, we went through an EOS implementation. And so, but we were pretty.
You got the L10s coming today, right?
That's right. Yeah, I have two L10s tomorrow on Wednesdays. So we have, you know, we were very systematic before that. In fact, the group that came to do our implementation originally, we showed them how we use Asana, which is fairly advanced, and they've taken it to a whole other level. But now they teach it in their implementations about how to build systems and processes. And so, but yeah, I think a lot of it was just through trial and error and through having to figure out. You know, we went from in the single family space, you see everybody with whiteboards, like, are the utilities on, blah, 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 like all these things, right? And it went to like, I'm not at the office all the time. I can't see what's going on. How do we get this in the cloud? And there's just some amazing tools today, some of which we just talked about, that allow us to, because across, truthfully, across my companies, we have about 80 virtual assistants. So they're overseas. Like we can't know what's going on unless they go on the checklist and they mark it off, right? Yes. And so it's just amazing to have tools like that, that start with like, how do we do this? You know, what's the first thing we do? What's the second thing we do? And like you said, you know, Gino, as a business owner, sometimes I just go to somebody on my team and say, look, I need you to write down exactly how you do this. Right. It doesn't all have to come from me. And so those checklists and those processes just evolve over time.
What about a habit that you've developed over the years that has contributed to your success?
Habit. You know, I think a lot of it is back to what we talked about before is with all the coaching and all the things that I do, I think it's just putting other people first. Like, how do I impact other people's lives? That gives me a lot of joy, for one, if I know that I've impacted them or they share that with me, especially. But just kind of trying to put other people before me, because at the end of the day, if I win and nobody else does, like, you know, this really is a win-win business. So, you know, I think it's focus on other people and how to benefit them. You know, in the single family space, one of the things that we did early on and we taught everybody to do is in my coaching is to like look for things outside of what people are saying. So if you're meeting with a seller and, you know, you're there to buy the house, you're trying to learn some things about them. But if they talk about like, oh, my grandmother's really sick, or this is my cat and my cat's, you know, here's why I have a three-legged cat or whatever, just something unique, is to make notes and track that stuff. Because when you follow up with people over time and you remember something that they shared with you a year or two ago, it makes a huge difference. And so we pay attention to little details, birthdays, children, all those things. We're huge on kind of gift giving and just recognizing people for things that everybody else forgot, but we remember that. And so that's, you know.
And it makes for a fun culture too, I'm sure.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt.
Best guest that you've had on your podcast?
Best guest. Well, you guys haven't been on yet.
Yes. Sign us up, Gino. Gino, throw me into anything. So,
best guess. That's putting it out there. I've got about 1,500 podcasts.
Someone surely stood out at this point.
Yeah. I would say. Why don't I just? I'll use our buddy Corey Peterson, the Big Kahuna. We met in a group a long time ago. We've become actually great friends. Our families travel together and stuff now, and so I'll use Corey.
That's awesome that you meet on the podcast and then you become great friends. I mean, that's it. That's the epitome of mastermind. That is awesome. Yep.
It works well. Any book recommendations that you've read in the last few years that will add value to the folks?
You know, I recently finished up Who Not How, which I think is a great book. I don't know if you guys have read it, but it talks a lot about, at the end of the day, a lot of us, we've talked a lot about processes and checklists and things here, and we tend to be like focused on how to do something. And this idea of this book, Who Not How, which is actually, I think it's come out in the past year. It's been pretty popular here over the past year, is like, stop
That's
trying to figure out.
That's the systems guy, right? What's his name?
Stop trying to figure out how to do it and just figure out who has to figure out how to do it, right?
Mm-hmm. Who wrote that one?
I don't know who wrote it, but it was
with systems coaching, right? He's like a business coach, right?
Yeah.
Dennis something? Or
I don't remember off the top of my head. I don't know why I'm looking behind me. I thought it might be back there, but
Keep one right there.
It's on my nightstand. Right? It's actually on my I specifically know it's on my nightstand right now, but
yeah, I know who you're talking about. So G-Dad, wrap us up here.
Mikey H, corporate slave.
Not anymore.
Gets his MBA. Starts flipping homes in the Dallas area, a couple hundred homes. Then he starts Flip Nerd about 8 years ago, 1,500 podcasts. In the last 5 years, I think, Jake, the mind shift from having a scarcity mindset to the abundance mindset where I want to do everything myself. I have the secret sauce. No one's going to know what I know. So all of a sudden, I'm out there. I'm sharing with other people. It's collaborative. And ironically enough, once I start collaborating, I have new business opportunities. I have new deals coming to you. It's just amazing what happens when you adopt that abundance mindset and you create a mastermind to get people in there to continue who have an abundance mindset themselves and to continue to grow and continue to scale and continue to have, I think, one of your core values as impacting other people's lives. That's what real estate can do, everybody. One of the best businesses on the planet. As my boy Jake Stenziano likes to say, everybody eats at the table in real estate.
A lot of meat.
And potatoes.
Dan Sullivan, by the way, that's the guy we were missing there. Oh, so,
yeah. Damn. Yeah, there was another guy that it's kind of influenced by Dan Sullivan. The guy that wrote it is almost like a ghost writer. I can't remember what his name is. But
Mike, where can the listeners get a hold of you?
I'm probably more active on Facebook than I should be. So Facebook or Instagram are both good. You can find me out there, Mike Hambright. And, you know, or check me out on at flipnerd.com.
Mike, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks, hey, great Mike. To be with you guys.